Are you ready to ignite your brand, your business, and your life? Welcome to the Firestarter Podcast. I'm your host, Willa Kammerer, and this is a space for bold conversations on building your high-caliber personal brand, scaling your online business, and leading with purpose. Here we dive into the strategies, systems, and stories behind today's most magnetic entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and creators, alongside world-class experts in sales and marketing, performance, mindset, and leadership. Together, we'll dive deep into what it takes to build a premium personal brand that not only stands out, but is good business. From camera confidence to software systems and brand authority to life alignment, each episode is designed to spark clarity and fuel your next level. As a single mompreneur and movement maker, my mission is to help you not just build a brand and business, but to craft a life and legacy on fire. I asked you before and I'll ask you again, are you ready to ignite your brand, your business, and your life? If so, tune in and let's dive in. Welcome to the Firestarter Podcast. I'm Willa Kammerer. Today we're talking about IP and how to protect your brand before it's too late. And this is a super important conversation, and I'm really excited to be joined by Sarah Gilliland. And we're just going to dive into all things legal, brand protection, and intellectual property. So
yeah, thanks for having me. And I promise we make it as fun as possible. I've had my clients use words like enjoyable, fun. I liked that. So it's not all just legal.
I've never heard those used in the same sentence with legal, but we are here to open minds and hearts on the Firestarter Podcast. Sure. So I'm super excited to to jump into it with you. And we're already laughing, so that's a good sign. Yeah. So walk us back a little bit on your journey. You know, how did you get into this? There are many lanes in the legal world. How did you make this one your own?
Yeah, and I've had a few of my own. I started my career at like 19 years old, knowing I wanted to be a lawyer, sending paper resumes to every lawyer in the town, asking them to please just let me answer their phones or take out their trash or something. And I had the benefit of working for several general practice firms before even going to law school. And it kind of started as a process of elimination, like absolutely not family law. I really thought I wanted to go into juvenile advocacy, which my heart is there. And I think that that will be someday more of my service work. But as a career, I could not draw good personal boundaries there. So kind of the things that wouldn't work. And I had started a different transactional business practice, built it up, sold it, and had really burnt myself out and decided in, you know, act two of law firm ownership, what if this could be fun? What is the most enjoyable part? And I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I'm an entrepreneur before I'm a lawyer, you know, in self-identity. And that's the part that's really exciting, that building, that naming, the branding part, which I'm sure is what you love so much. And to be able to play this legal role on, okay, let's set the foundation of that. Let's protect that. And I get to have so much fun in that work with the clients.
I love that. I love that. And I think it speaks to finding the balance, right? Because it's that entrepreneurial energy and wanting to come up with new things and, you know, kind of be in that kind of creative, generative mode. Mm-hmm. And yet the importance of also honoring the back end of what it takes to support that, to build the structures and the supports so that it can be sustainable for the long term. So right. Walk us through about, you know, why is intellectual property something that every entrepreneur needs to be thinking about along their journey? When do they need to start thinking about it?
Yeah, and it's something that I have seen change in a huge way. I'm going to say over just the last 5 or 6 years. 15 years ago, for sure, it was not something most small businesses, entrepreneurs needed to worry about. That it was a big brand thing. But with the World Wide Web, and then not, you know, we started that, you know, however many years ago, and it became really normal in business. You know, don't come for me, but let's say like 2010, 2015, like every business had that web presence. And then we moved into social media. And when you are selling and serving people and selling your products, not just, you know, locally at your little shop or locally to your direct market and contacts, but we're now selling everywhere. That's where brands get on top of each other a lot more. And that's where trademark and that intellectual that part of intellectual property protection just really became critical. And then your ideas are out there. People get really disappointed to learn that ideas alone can't be protected. So when you hear people say, hey, I just thought of this, trademark that. I'm like, oh, you can't. It's just an idea. Yeah. but what are the other foundations we can set that effectively protect your ideas when just that, you have it, and then anyone can take it and you can't do anything about it?
So what are some of the things that entrepreneurs and anyone looking to build something or who has built something, what are some of the things that they should be thinking about protecting?
The name of the brand, like what you're calling the thing, the name of your business. It doesn't, just dispel a quick misunderstanding that I hear over and over, it doesn't have to be the same as your LLC name or the same as your domain name. Forget about the domain name. It doesn't really matter that much. But the actual thing that you're calling the offering in the business, and then if you have a really crucial tagline, you know, if your tagline is best in customer service, like it doesn't matter. No, you're fine. But if you have a tagline that really signals this is our brand, you should protect that. And your key offerings. And I have a lot of clients that say, the business name is my personal name. It's Susie Smith. I don't care if there's 1,000 Susie Smiths that do what I do. I'm not trying to protect that. I don't have a tagline, but my key offering, this program that we have, this is where the gold is. And if anybody else used that name, I would lose it. Mm-hmm. Then that's the thing to protect. So a lot of people have, many of my clients have kind of this portfolio of trademarks of that whole hierarchy. I have a very scientific test on how to decide if you should trademark it. Would it suck really bad if somebody sent you a cease and desist that you can't use it anymore? Or if you went to protect it and you found out a week before, a month before, somebody else had filed the trademark first. Mm-hmm. That happens so often. So if that would suck, if you were like, that would be a gut punch, then that means you should probably act on it pretty quick.
I love that. I love that. And I was actually waiting for the super scientific. But
that's a level of suckage.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's the scale of suckage. Yeah, yeah. So like, what does the process look like for, you know, can sound a little bit daunting, you know, engaging in a legal process, submitting applications, et cetera, having been through multiple, you know, kind of trademark things. Processes myself. So I imagine you make it easier though.
Hold your client's hands. I really do try to make it easy. Dare I say enjoyable, because shocker, nobody wants to talk to a lawyer. That seems to be that first hurdle that people are like, but it means I would have to talk to a lawyer. We're not all terrible, and it can actually be a pretty fun process, but we really work to make it feel easy and feel like our client is taken care of and somebody else is taking this off of their plate. Entrepreneurs are so busy. Business owners are so busy doing so many things. And we catch ourselves trying to become the expert at everything that we need. And that's exhausting. And at Rising Brand Legal, we really try to take that off and just make it feel like, okay, somebody's got the, we've got your back. Somebody has this taken care of. But it's a process for sure. Yeah, there's, you know, questionnaires, intake, payment, collection of information. And then it takes to get through the whole process. It takes about a year to a year and a half. And that's usually where most people are like, oh gosh, do I want to even do this? Yeah. That sounds
like
awful.
The unknowns of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it is something throughout that year and a half that the lawyer's got it taken care of for you. Mm-hmm. You can give the information you need. Really one of the things that makes it important during that year and a half though is your filing date is your protection date. And so it's really important to get it in there. Yes, everything else comes at the end of the process. That circle R comes at the end. The reward comes at the end. But once you file, the Kardashians cannot spend enough money to jump ahead of you in line. So that filing date secures your place in line for that process. And that's where it can become critical that a frenemy has not jumped ahead of you and gotten an earlier filing date, because that makes things much more difficult and much more expensive when things are legally difficult.
I know I've also seen some trademarking of like proprietary processes and methodologies. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's actually, and I light up. I'm like, this is so interesting. And you're like, that's boring. It has gotten interesting lately because literally in the last handful of months, the trademark board has come out and said methods cannot be trademarked. It was kind of already in a rule, and they applied that rule to say the method is an idea. The method can't be trademarked. Now, if you put it in a certain form, you can copyright that. That's a different chunk of law, similar protection, different, still IP. But it actually became really interesting with the Mel Robbins decision on Let Them, because they called that, they refused it and called it a failure to function as a trademark. Now, that's really new. So if you listen to this in 2 years and Mel Robbins lawyers have done their thing and fought that and they did get it, then, you know. But as of this But as of this date, that's been a really popular one that was refused for failure to function as a trademark because it's more of an idea, a method, a system, not a brand identifier. So that's where really we counsel our clients if they're wanting to secure something with a trademark. And I don't want people to feel like, oh gosh, it is a method. I can never protect this. People can rip it off. Well, what are some things that you can create that is a true offering, that is a brand identifier service that you can offer under this trademark, and we could protect it in that lane?
Yeah, I think that's really helpful advice. How does this relate also to just the overall long-term health of a company? And if you're ever looking to build a company and sell a company, how does IP and protecting assets of the company and the brand fit into that?
Yes, I promise I did not feed this question. It's such a good question, though, because that's what many business owners think. Okay, you know what? And I'm never one to shame somebody's business risk decision. All we're doing as business owners is making risk decisions every day. So if you have the information you need and you decide, you know what, this is, I don't need the trademark. I'm not worried about the trademark. I'm not going to wrap up that process. I have so much respect for that business risk decision. But if a goal is to sell a brand, that can become really challenging if you don't have a trademark. It is something that's part of the due diligence process for your buyer. If a buyer is going to purchase your company, they're purchasing the brand. They're purchasing the recognizability of that company. And that's an asset. And so if that's not something that's secure that you definitely own, or worst case, if there's an infringement problem or a legal problem around that brand, you might kill the deal, or you might be taking your dollars way down to assets that aren't around the goodwill in the brand. And that sucks really bad. That hits the suckage scale.
That definitely hits the suckage scale. Yeah, yeah. Especially if you've been working for all these years for that big, big buyout. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you have any kind of like victory stories or just kind of like cool kind of like trademarking stories.
I do have a couple. I can't name names, but I can't name names, but I can share a couple. I have had, just in the last year, I have had a record number of trademark successes that another attorney told the client it couldn't be done. Whether it's because there was another similar brand, but we found the nuance that made it,
you might be getting a call similar from me.
or whether they just got bad information. There were several of those that people in passing would be like, oh yeah, my lawyer already told me I can't trademark this. And I'm like, why? Tell me more. And we got it done. And so those were really exciting and fun, especially when, you know, the relationship starts with the expectations so low and we're able to deliver high. I think in any business, we're like, that's a huge win.
Definitely. I love that. I love that. So, you know, share a little bit more about, you know, your own entrepreneurial, you know, story and, you know, how you kind of like balance the kind of the feelings of being an entrepreneur with also a legal career, which is not as traditional entrepreneurial.
I, you know, another thing about me going into trademarks specifically is it really does help. I mentioned I'm definitely an entrepreneur first. I want to create something new every single day. Much to my husband's chagrin, I would create a new business every single day doing all kinds of things, not just related to the law. I would do a million different things. And being able to work with clients that are building their own thing, I can kind of live vicariously. And I really, really enjoy that part. But yeah, as I mentioned, I did start in transactional law, completely burnt myself out. And so many lawyers face that. It's a very high burnout, high mental health problem, high substance abuse problem, career path, because it's so high pressure. There's a lot at stake. And it's the whole system from law school, we're set up to kind of burn ourselves out, compete cutthroat, don't be collaborative. And when I was so young in my career and had already just had terrible health problems from burnout, was just ready to retire at 35, but my bank account wanted to argue with me. Mm-hmm. That's when I really just got that exploratory entrepreneur spirit about it, on like, how do you make this fun? And I think that we can apply that to any kind of business. All businesses have their level of pressure. All self-employment or entrepreneurship can feel like you want to quit every other day. And I think that if you can take what makes us so good at what we do, is that we can already take a traditional way of doing things and get creative and mold it and move it around and turn it into something else. And that's definitely what I did with my practice. And I really feel for my friends that are in some traditional practices and they're hurting and they're struggling. And I'm like, what if you just went out on your own? And that sounds terrible to them, and that's fine. But, you know, I think we can all do that when we feel like, how is this going to work? Or I can't do this one more day, to really just like lean fully into that creative spirit and be like, I can actually turn this into anything I want it to be. And I, you know, unless there's like laws, I don't have to follow anybody else's rules about what this field or this career looks like.
Absolutely. I love that. And knowing yourself and knowing how you want to live your life and that you want to have fun, mm-hmm. how you want it to feel, right? Yeah. And then reverse engineering to create that in your own life, in your career. I just love that.
And don't get me wrong, sometimes it still feels terrible.
Totally.
I'm in the middle. Of course, I have the brilliant idea of launching two really big things at one time right now. So, you know, right now, I'll admit I'm kind of in a level of suckage of entrepreneurship. But at the same time, we know that that's temporary. That's while we're creating, while we're building, so that
it's a season of suckage.
It's a season of suckage so that it can turn into that end goal lifestyle that we know we're creating with that.
Yeah. I love that. Where would you recommend, you know, people get started with this process? You know, I guess if you could speak to the people who are like, I have an idea. I think I have this name. Should I go to a, you know, trademark lawyer? Should I call you up? And then speaking to that person, and then speaking to someone who is already established, but maybe hasn't gone the IP route and, you know, kind of gotten past.
Just bite the bullet, find a day that you're willing to talk to a lawyer. I think I'm fun to talk to. It doesn't have to be me though, any lawyer, but just go ahead and set that first conversation. You don't have to commit to anything. You don't have to do anything, but get the ball rolling on just starting that conversation. I know when I talk to clients, we go ahead and dive into it in that first conversation to just get an idea, run a quick search, get an idea, what will this look like for you? And then decide. You can choose your adventure each step of the way, but start with that conversation, both for somebody that just has an idea. That is the textbook best time to file a trademark is before you launch. Mm-hmm. But I know that that's not always practical. I have plenty of clients that have been in their business for 10 years and they're like, I kind of don't want people copying me. We can do it at that time too. But just set the conversation, get the ball rolling, and then you can decide. You don't have to do anything. You're in charge of yourself. You don't have to do anything. But just get the information you need to decide if you want to do something about it now. or not.
I love that. Such helpful advice. And you're in Arizona, but you work all over the place, right?
Right. And that is what another thing I love about trademark law is I'm not limited to my state. Yeah. When we're talking about contracts or any kind of law, you're pretty much limited to the state where you're licensed. But I have clients all over the world that as long as they are selling products or services in the U.S., it's federal law. So I take clients from anywhere. Everything's virtual. You don't have to come sit in a stuffy office, and neither do I. And that's really fun to be able to work with people that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you basically have found the most fun part of law. So good job.
I did. I found it. It was kind of dusty, hidden in a corner, but I found it.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks so much for all that you've shared with our listeners and just making it approachable for everyone, because I think a topic like legal can just... people can put a lot of blinders on and put up a lot of fear.
Yeah, your eyes glaze over and you're like, I don't want to.
Yeah. But this has not been one of those conversations.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And where can our listeners find you, find more about you, and how to get in touch?
Yeah, you can find me. Instagram is a really great central location, at Sarah Knows Legal. My website's risingbrainlegal.com. And I also have a contract template shop, and that's for any US-based business for contract templates that are great for service-based businesses, and that's thelegalshop.com.
Awesome. And we will definitely have to get you in for a Firestarter expert session. We like to bring in experts from all areas to support our business owners inside of Firestarter. And our resources will be linked. All of Sarah's info will be in our show notes at thefirestarterpodcast.com. Stay tuned for that expert session that we will announce as well. And you can learn more about everything that we're doing at firestarterfunnels.com. And we have an extra special for our podcast listeners. We would love for you to join our community and our platform. And you can sign up using the special code podcast, and you can get 50% off for the first 3 months of your subscription to Firestarter Funnels. And we would love to have you. So join us over there at firestarterfunnels.com. And thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Firestarter Podcast. We will see you next time. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Firestarter Podcast. If this episode sparked something for you, I would love to stay connected. Please be sure to subscribe to the Firestarter Podcast on YouTube on my channel, Willa Kammerer. Leaving a quick review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify goes such a long way in helping this message reach more people who are ready to step into their next level brand, business, and life. Head over to willakammerer.com for show notes, resources, behind-the-scenes insights, and ways to work with me and my team. Also, I'd love to connect on Instagram and LinkedIn at Willa Kammerer. That's K-A-M-M-E-R-E-R. Thank you for being here, for choosing growth and the courage to build something meaningful. Until next time, keep trusting yourself, taking bold action, and living like the Firestarter that you are.